It's Wednesday, January 12th, 2011, and you're listening to episode 217 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 7 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
And this is Johan.
Here
wow,
we are.
That was tight.
What?
I said that was just a tight round. We usually have pause of about 5 seconds, and then, and my name is Chris. That, of course, gets edited
yeah,
out
gets
by
edited
Dan,
out,
so you would never know it, but yeah, around the mics, it's always funny.
All right, so we're on the other side of the holidays, on the other side of two bonus episodes. I'm proud to say that the podcast has done a better job of hanging in there than either of our games have.
Hey, our game's still going.
Well, yeah.
It's still on.
And technically, my other campaign, my Friday campaign, is still on as well. We'll just have
to... Well, I don't care about that one.
Have to see if it recovers or not.
Are you having trouble there? Or is it...
Oh, yeah.
Is it just scheduling?
It's too many scheduling issues. Yeah. There's been a series of holidays mixed Certainly. With my job running me into the ground, mixed with... I don't want to go into details. It's not my place, but... one of the people we're gaming with has gotten pretty ill, and that's really messed things up. And obviously that has to come first, but nonetheless, these things have converged in a perfect storm that has kept that game from happening for about a month and a half, 2 months.
Are we up to 2 months on that?
Or
are
you like,
yeah.
If this one pulls out, it may be a new record for me of longest time in the crapper and still recovered.
Our current Sunday game, though, it's going good. I mean, we gamed once this month, but
are we on?
That's outstanding.
Are we on for this weekend still?
Yes, yeah, we are.
Good. I think I'll actually be there because I was going to be out to visit Tex, but I have a second visit with Tex coming up. I'm going to try and condense those together so that I can still be there for the game. So,
awesome.
I'll have to see, but I think I will be there.
So, Johan, are you
going to make it?
You're not going to make it.
It's a shame. But
you know what? Come on. You work with me here. I need to get your character in.
Johan, so, for those of you just catching on at home, no, it is not odd. It actually is Chad and Johan at the same time.
We call him Chohan.
I like that.
Chodhan?
I don't think that's like even
that.
Better.
I don't like that at all.
New character on Bleach this season.
Did you know that there is a character on Bleach named Chad?
No, I didn't.
Well, his name is Chad, but they call him Chaddle.
Chaddle.
That's all. I'm going to start calling Chaddle. You that
from now on. Chaddle.
If people start calling me Chaddle, and you've got to say it like that, too, you just can't say, hey,
Chad. You have to follow it up with nice muscle.
Squeeze on. Chaddle.
Yeah, you just can't go, hey, Chaddle, what's up? It's like, that sounds stupid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Chaddle.
Yeah. See, I like that. Dig it.
All right, so let's talk about something good that came out of the holidays here on the forums. And if you're not on the forums, this is another reason why you should be. Every year we do a Secret Santa thing where everyone swaps gifts.
I screwed myself. Shut up.
Really? Was that a gift?
I would say I do that every year. I pretty much do that at least once a day.
The gift to your prostate that keeps on giving.
I think I typoed my address.
He typed in a 4-digit zip code.
Yep. And I did not get my gift.
If someone just copy and pasted that, it would probably front load with a 0, which would put it on the East Coast somewhere.
I know. I'm so disappointed. And you know what? I don't know who got me. I don't know what I got or who got me. So,
well, I got something. I'm going to have to post a picture of this because I'll give a description here on the mics, but I'm going to post a picture with these show notes because description alone is going to do no justice because this is a handcrafted gift,
yes,
or at any rate, a hand recrafted gift. And I was going to put this little girl here next to Unicron, but after talking to Carla, we're actually worried that this thing sitting out might get too dusty or bumped around too much. It's actually going to go in a curio cabinet that we have in the dining room. I have a shelf there dedicated to trophies that I've gotten while doing the podcast. Like, for example, the customized die I got the first time I attended the Gamma actual Game Trade Association. Sure. The first time someone was stupid enough to give our show legitimacy. And it's been all downhill from there. But this is going to go with it, which this is a My Little Pony Pegasus named...
Pegasi.
No, it's only one.
No, wait. Pegasus. Oh, Pegasus is one.
Yeah,
for I apologize.
Second, that would be Pegasi.
Apologize.
But her name is Boots. And Boots actually has added on to her two Fear the Boot boots. On one of the front hooves is the Chris Hussey Crimson Pumpkin. She's got a collection of dice tattooed kind of on her flank. And then on her is a handmade dice bag that actually has like miniature, those really tiny D6s in it. So she's ready to throw down on some battle tech.
Nice.
And then she has fangs that apparently I'm told in the backstory from my Secret Santa that she got with Wayne. And the reason that she can't smoke a cigar with Chad,
because she was originally
because these custom fangs get in the way of the cigar chomping. And she's got long, luxurious hair that I've been told not to cut off and donate to Locks of Love, which is fine because this hair is not at least, 10 inches or whatever it has to be. So, but I will post a picture of this with the show notes. It's pretty cool. So thank you very much, my Secret Santa, for sending this my way.
Yes.
In other Fear the Boot news, we mentioned several shows back that Kicked in the Dice Bags was sort of reformulating itself, and we put out a casting call for hosts.
It did a little bit more than reformulate itself now.
Yeah, it massively restructured. They went from having two hosts on one show to down to one host with some stand-ins. They are now up to, I believe it is, 8 hosts on 2 shows, and a lot of the folks staffing it are people that responded to that casting call on Fear the Boot. Mm-hmm. So a ton of your fellow booters are now working with Chris Mace on Kicked in the Dice Bags. And what they've done is they've kind of brought the show back to a little bit more of a geek and a gaming focus, and it still has some foul language and such, but it's a geek and gaming related show, and they've divided it into 2 teams, one doing a Dungeon Masters or Game Masters edition that focuses on GMing issues, and one that's a Players edition that focuses more on a player's perspective. And by the time this show drops, I believe they will have episodes out that will have included, as guest hosts, me, John, Wayne, and Pat. I know they're trying to grab you for sure.
Are they?
I don't know if they have yet or not.
They have not.
Okay, they have not.
But I will have to get in touch with them then.
I'm going
to
have been on one or two, and John will have been in there, and Wayne will have been in there. So I'm going to put some links in the show notes. I don't think I'm linked to all these shows individually.
Johan.
There's no love.
There's none. There's none.
Hey, they
for
said,
Uncle Chode or...
Well, Chador, let me tell you right now that you must have...
More people need to call me Chador. I love it.
That you must have a nice muscle because they specifically asked for all the hosts of Fear the Boot at some point. They want to rotate every one of us through there. So I'm not
going to... like this great Kicked in the Dice Bags machine that
is destroying us each one by one.
You up and spits
so
you out.
I'm not going to link each of those episodes individually because it'd be quite a few, but I will put a link over to their feed. So if you're interested in checking out the reformulated Kicked in the Dice Bags, either show, including the episodes that have us as guest hosts, then certainly you'll want to wander over to the show notes and find your way into their domicile. Chad.
Chad, what?
Chad all.
Thank you.
Nice and muscle. So you came up.
So ridiculous.
I still.
And so fitting.
Someone sent me a thing asking if we were going to rent out that theater in the hotel and do the Muscle March tournament this year. And I'm going to try to, but I'm still having problems getting the multiplayer to work. So I don't know how we can do the tournament, but I really do want the Muscle March tournament to happen.
Wow.
So we can finally find out.
It's your dream. When you get that done, you're done.
I am going to have, if I can get the multiplayer to work, I'm even going to get a custom trophy. It's just going to have the most homoerotic, muscular man in a G-string I can find on top of it.
Some Wayne.
And it's just, yeah, that's exactly, thanks. Now I'm not going to sleep ever.
You're welcome.
And the little caption on the plaque is just going to say, nice and muscle. For anyone who has no idea what we're talking about, I'll link that in the show notes, too.
You're off.
So you're gonna link a picture of Wayne in a G-string in the show notes.
Yeah. Yes.
Excellent.
That is exactly. It's
because we've got a lot of those pictures.
It's going to be like Goatsy, except scary.
Wayne is a fine-looking man. He is a handsome
ginger.
He suffers from gingivitis.
He is. Yeah. He is a ginger.
So, Chad.
Okay. Yes.
You had a topic here you wanted to talk about, and I want you to set this one up, because I kind of get it, but I don't know that I totally catch all the nuance here.
Yeah.
So I want you to set this one up.
What I want to talk about is role-playing advice.
I don't think we do that on the show.
None. No. Well, we do. That's why it's so different, because it's usually combat. Now we're switching it up. So, like, there's a situation, or the sort of path of the story, or kind of where that story is going, is that there's going to be a combat encounter. You know, it's like the bar fight, and everybody's reaching for their guns, and the game master's about to roll initiative. It's role-playing advice on how to get out of the combat, how to kind of go around it, and not just in a sense that, oh, combat's bad and boring and we want to get out of combat, but just more of like a role-playing event. There's right. situations where maybe you'd want to. There could be a big, huge guy and you're just going to get your ass kicked and you kind of want to get out of getting your ass kicked. Or you just want to do a role-playing situation. Or maybe you have combat every week and you're fine with it and you just want to do something different.
That's just not the resolution your character would want.
Yeah. It would be in character to talk your way out of it. And I was taking from the perspective of role-playing your way out of it. What's advice we can give for role-playing out that situation? And then Pat and Johan were throwing out different ideas on how to use the skills on your character sheet to get around that sort of thing, in addition to the role-playing. And Pat even gave an idea of how to use combat to get out of combat, which I thought was very interesting. That's my pitch.
All right. Well, first,
hopefully that was cogent. But,
okay, I follow. But yeah. First, I got to hear this thing from Pat on how to use combat to get out of combat.
Well, what I was saying is if you are at the point of no return where
right.
it's about to come to violence and you really are thinking, oh, wow, I don't want to get into this because either we may not survive or we just don't have the time or whatever, you wanted to avoid it, creatively playing your character to try to do things to avoid coming mm-hmm. to violence, like what my example was, well, what something you could do is if the big guy's, he's just broken a bottle over the bar and he's getting ready to fight you, kick to the side of his knee and you disable the big guy before he even takes yeah. a swing. And all of a sudden he's not fighting you because you dislocated or broke his knee.
I can think
so he's on the ground, you know, something along those lines.
I can think of two examples. The movie Unleashed. The first time they put Jet Li in the pit to do his pit fighting. And, you know, you got this big guy and the crowds are cheering. They're going yeah. crazy. It's going to be this huge fight. And they kind of set up before that he's kicking some other guy's ass. And they throw Jet Li. He's this real tiny guy. Jet Li kind of walks up to him and they yell, go. And he just does whap, punches him in the throat. And the guy falls over dead. And then he turns around and walks away.
Yeah.
And that's using fighting to get out of the combat. Or another thing I was thinking of is like Pat's idea. The guy's at the bar and he grabs a bottle and he's coming towards you and you do this martial arts kick and you break the bottle in his hand with the kick. And then you come down in a fighting stance and you just look him right in the eye.
All right, come on, we're going to go to this and not do Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, yeah.
Well, sure.
They sell yeah,
for it. Sword fight yeah. and Harrison Ford improvs. I've yeah. got a gun. Why would I fight this guy? And just shoots him and yeah, they go with it.
Exactly.
And, you know, for me, at least, I'm thinking that these situations are going to primarily be in what you might call your random encounter kind of a thing. I don't think that in most times, say you have had a big plan fight or this is sort of you've been going to this encounter. You know, you're coming to a combat. It's sort of going that way. And you see it that it's been building up to it that you're going to just sidestep the big in-game battle by punching a guy in the throat and it's over.
So why not?
I'm thinking like, well,
that would,
and you, and
that
I, you
would
had
be cool.
A, well, and you had yeah. an example from Fear of the Con where you indeed did that. But in that sense, I would feel kind of cheated. Now, on the other hand, like I said, if these, you know, random encounters where it's like you go into the bar and you start insulting the people because you're just being a dick that day. And so you're trying to pick a fight and all of a sudden he's going to fight you because it's like, well, you're pissing this guy off and he's not just going to take it. I mean, that's sort of an unplanned kind of a thing.
See, to me, you talk about the big boss fight at the end where the entire campaign that you've been playing for years is leading up to this guy and fighting him. And it's just like, we don't like railroady games. We don't like being told what to do by the story or by the GM. Yet we have to do this thing where we have to kill this guy. Why can't we as players approach this problem from multiple angles?
The only answer I have to that is that from the perspective of a DM who DMs a lot from a tactical standpoint,
yeah,
a lot of times I will spend 20 hours mm-hmm. working on this guy and
sure.
setting up this tactical engagement. And it really sucks when the players just bypass it. I'm not saying I wouldn't let it happen.
Right.
But I might very well cry on the way home.
Yeah. Well, you know, and don't get me wrong. The big climactic fight is a great trope. And it's been in great movies, great books, and great games. but it is a little overused.
Well, let me back up to a central thought here that I think sits at the foundation of any answer I would give, which is the game master has to have buy-in. Or maybe put a better way, the game master has to have that sense of flexibility.
Sure.
Because if the game master has it in his mind that we're about to roll initiative, then you say, well, I'm going to shoot him. He's going to say, okay, if you roll initiative and win, you can pull out your gun and do that. As opposed to just letting you declare that and dramatically ending the fight. Well, if you say, I'm going to attempt to talk the situation down and have this really cool role play, he'll say, okay, when we get to your turn, you can attempt to do that. And you've got to have that game master buy-in. And I think this is why, at least for me, I think I would actually be more likely to let it fly on the big boss fights than I would on the random encounters. Heavens, don't use random encounters. But back when I did use random encounters, what were they there for? It was to fluff up the game. It was filler.
Yeah.
So you were supposed to have the fight. On the big bad, well, this was supposed to be a dramatic plot moment. And if you had a convincing way out of the fight, well, that was just as interesting as the barely made it skin of our teeth fight. Mm-hmm. And so I was more likely to allow it. But ultimately, the game master is the gatekeeper of how things get resolved. Does he allow you to simply declare XYZ and roll through because it's cool? Or is he going to make you roll initiative, roll your dex, roll your strength?
Now, you know, I'm thinking to my joint. Our current game with this last chapter we did. You had the, you remember this, right, Johan? We had the big bad in there. And the big bad was, to toot my own horn, he was a well-made, very detailed character who had a lot of nuance and character to him. He wasn't just evil for the sake of evil. He was questionable, definitely questionable, but he just wasn't killing people because he liked it. But these guys set themselves to the task of toppling this guy through violence, which was fine. I mean, that's totally where we were going with this. As the game master, I presented them with many different ways and opportunities to do this. It could have been the big fight, like, let's roll initiative, let's get the spells flying, and let's do this. Or it could have been through subterfuge. It could have been through, they could have poisoned him, stabbed him in the back, done whatever. And I played the character out where they had this big plan, and Pat did a bonehead move, and it revealed their plans in a certain way. And it was all in character. It was all really cool. And the guy walked into the middle of the trap that the players had so cleverly laid for him, and he threw them off script. Everyone thought that he was leading them into a trap, so it was like a reverse trap. And so Dan played his card to take him off script, which caused a big role-playing moment. It was a big back and forth of, you know, where do you stand? What kind of character are you? We're doing this. Why are you doing this? I don't have to tell you anything. And it was this big thing. And Dan's big, huge hulk of a Knoll had the big bad by the neck, lifted him 2 feet off the ground. And the big bad is looking him in the eye, and he talked him down. The bad guy talked Dan down.
Well, not exactly.
But talked you out of the fight.
It was more I realized he wanted the fight, and so I figured the worst thing I could do to him was to take him off script and not give him what he expected. Right. And so it was, I was going to find some other way to resolve it, and then Wayne declares, I shank him in the back.
Right.
It
was in character. It was an impressive scene. For me,
it did make sense. It made sense. It was
if you
in character annoyance.
If you were by yourself and this was a book you were writing, you wouldn't have the character of Sir William do that. But because a role-playing game isn't a book, it's those unexpected things that make it really interesting.
Let me ask you guys this. After hearing that story...
Well, you were there.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, then obviously I know the answer to this question, too. But when Wayne came up behind him and shanked him in the back, were dice involved?
No.
Okay. What if the positions were reversed
and
an NPC shanks you in the back and there's no dice involved?
Well, there couldn't be dice.
How would you feel about that as a player?
There couldn't be dice involved because, remember, this guy was dangling 2 feet off the ground with these big Knoll clawed hands around his neck and his focus was elsewhere. But... how would you feel if the big bad did that to one of our guys with no dice involved?
I got to say, I would feel pretty shafted. In third
edition, are we talking death, or are we just talking like,
well, in third
a
edition,
nice scar?
There is,
take your pick. Okay. I'll accept an answer to either. But
well, in D&D 3 and 3.5, there is something called the coup de grace roll,
mm-hmm.
where basically if you have someone who is utterly immobilized and you just want to slit their throat, there are some die rolls you can make. They're all but gimmies, but nonetheless, you do have to go through the motions of making them to just basically not critically fail.
And especially at higher levels, those are survivable.
Yeah.
And so I have to say that I think I would feel shafted. I think the...
No, you'd feel shanked.
Which, I wouldn't feel like anything if it worked. But I guess the only distinction I could make, and I'm going to have to admit, this is a pretty debatable exception. I was about to say mm-hmm. weak, but I think it's more debatable than weak, because some people find this very strong. Other people will think this is total crap. The game is about the players, not the NPCs.
Right.
And so, therefore, I think it should be easier to dispose of NPCs than PCs. Now, I think some people would disagree with that, and rightly so. They would say, look, as I myself have said, the game and its rules and its mechanics are the arbiter of the story. They are what stands between the desires of the player and the desires of the GM. These are the things that balance out this universe, and so everyone has to abide by them. And if a GM said...
I still don't 100% agree with that. That's a totally different show.
Like I said, yeah. it's debatable,
yes.
is what I would say.
I think the story is the arbiter of the story.
But
that's because I'm a dirty hippie.
But I think if a GM said to
me... long hairs.
Yeah.
Give me the coup de grace roll.
I miss my hair.
I mean, the guy's armorless and restrained and whatever. It's basically don't roll ones, but do it.
Mm-hmm.
I would not resent that or object to that. And I think you may raise a valid point, Johan, that if the rules were reversed, I probably would resent the fact that I didn't even get a chance.
And the reason I bring it up is that that's an extreme situation.
Sure.
But anytime you're talking about having a diceless resolution to mm-hmm. a conflict, and I don't mean combat, but conflict in a game that has a mechanic for it, you are essentially wanting the DM to decide that you're right in what you want to happen.
Yeah.
Because if the DM wants something else to happen or thinks something else should happen based on your description of it, you're going to be pissed when that happens mm-hmm. and you didn't even get to roll for it.
Yeah.
So if you look at the DM and say, I'm going to talk this guy out of it, or you actually interact and you have the conversation and you're thinking, well, I'm going to talk this guy down, and instead he shanks you.
Yeah.
Then you're going to be mad because, well, look, I have this huge diplomacy skill. Why didn't you let me roll the dice?
Yeah.
And I think there's a real fine line there that is going to upset some people.
See, I don't mind shanking somebody like that and leaving a nice scar.
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't bother me as long as it didn't happen too often. As long as we don't walk into every single game, every single bar, somebody gets something stuck in them just because the GM has a scar fetish. But yeah, killing them without a roll... I've done it before, but I've done it with the collusion of the player. The mm-hmm. player wanted their character to die, and they've told me, my character has come to a point to where I want him to die. I want him to have a heroic death. I want to have a cowardly death. I want to have a weird death. Most of the time, what the player tells me is that I want the character to die, but I don't want to know how or when or what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Surprise me. Make it cool. And I'm like, all right. And at that point, yeah, I would totally do that.
Yeah, and I think that's the important distinction, because that changes it right there.
Yeah.
That's completely different than with most. Like, I've actually never run a character. I've never played a character that I got to the point where I thought, okay, I just want this character to die. My characters, I always want them to live. It's very human of me. I want them to survive.
You know, I don't think that I've ever played a character where I've chosen to have it die.
Yeah.
Have I?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Pit fighter.
Yeah, that's right.
You chose for him. You wanted him to die.
Heroic death that saved the universe. Yes.
Actually, it really didn't.
No, it didn't.
It no, it was
a futile waste of a life.
Yeah, it was a futile, but that was the point.
Yeah.
It was
a gesture.
It was sound and fury signifying nothing at the end of a life that was sound and fury signifying nothing.
Yep. It was
It was poetically beautiful, but yeah. It was
a pointless tragic loss of a pointless tragic character.
Yeah.
And
it was wonderfully executed, I thought. I mean, I actually didn't even mean to go there. Oh, well.
As we try and think of death puns, and then we're like, no, I don't think I even want to do death puns.
So I think we set out why the game master's architecture for the game, what he's going to allow, is important to this. But let's start talking about ways that you can get out of conflict without combat.
Monologuing villains.
Well, all right, that's what the villain's doing, but let's play what happened. You kicked the villain in the balls.
Kicked the villain in the balls and he went down and is in the middle of a police station. Then the game master was like, okay, we're done. You got him. He even made me roll dice for it. It was like critical success, critical. It was a critical damage, critical hit on a ball kick. And he's done.
Brutal.
It was brutal.
I think there's something you can do, which is apply real life.
Sorry, Ender.
Conflict resolution skills to the game. Look, if you've got two people who are about to come to blows over whatever, the same sort of tactics you'd use to derail that situation work in the game. What I'm going to throw out there is basically you just take control of the situation, storm the table. If the game master is getting ready to grab his die to roll initiative for round one, and you just
are you talking meta? Like you intimidate the game master down? Like, put those goddamn dice down!
Actually,
that does work.
Yes. Not quite to that extreme.
I love it.
Yes, but not quite that extreme. But the game master's grabbing his dice, and you stand up and say, I jump to my feet and yell, stop! We don't need to do it this way. I guarantee you, if you put enough zeal into it, the game master will pause.
Or the game master's like, okay, time for initiative. And you just take out a 45 and you put it on the table and you go, ahem. And that's all you do.
You do that with enough energy, you'll get the game master's attention.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's even better if you can catch the game master in moments before he's made that decision or she's made that decision to resolve this via combat. I remember back with the old like gold box D&D games. You know, heck, it was the intention of the old D&D games that you got experience and stuff based on an encounter. And an encounter didn't have to end in anyone's death. And the gold box games, when you ran into an enemy party, pretty much laid out the intended choices that you were supposed to be picking from, which was fight, parlay, sneak, flee. I don't remember what they all were, but it's about half a dozen things that were all the choices they intended you to take to resolve an encounter. But all these things work still to this day in a role-playing game of if the game master's not already grabbing dice for the initiative round, tell a metagame, you know, my character's uncomfortable with where this is headed, so I, and then declare some actions. Yeah. I'd like to try and sneak away. I'd like to try and roll my negotiation skill to talk the guy down. Just start role-playing out dialogue. I start pointing out,
keep the game master talking before he can get to the dice.
Honestly, yeah. Once again, real dispute resolution stuff. Bring it into the game.
Well, if we're going to go meta with this, another thing you can do.
But I don't think it has to be meta.
No. I jokingly say
there's
meta.
There's a meta dimension to it, certainly.
There's and in the back of your mind, the little cogs and wheels, absolutely. The planning is totally meta.
Well, but you have to do it anyway because you have to know what the GM's going to allow. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you right now, there is crap I could and would pull in a John game that I wouldn't get away with in a Chad game, and vice versa.
Couldn't you get away with in my game? I allow everything.
That's a good question.
Yeah, you know what, actually?
Who do I tell no?
I want to know what the kind of crap is you pull in a John game.
You're right. Now that I think about it, John's just kind of the Iron Lady, and Chad really is.
Chad's just a lady. Wait, no.
So anyways, go on, Chad. I'm sorry.
So, like I said, if we're going totally meta with this, how about Ravenloft, where we have to kill a vampire? So we really don't want to fight a vampire because they drain levels and they're really powerful. And, you know, the game master thinks it's a fair fight, but I've seen the stat sheet. It's not a fair fight. We're going to get our asses kicked, guys. So this is what we do. We stall on the puzzles. But we keep asking the game master what time of day it is. And we keep stalling through the encounters to where the evening, and I mean the real life evening, hey guys, it's 9:00, my mom wants me to go home evening. We push that and stall it right up into the end to where the game master is going to go. But we keep telling him in game, we keep getting him to tell us what time it is. And we try to line those two points up with the sunrise in game, and 5 minutes before it's time to go home, you rush the coffin. Sun's coming up, 5 minutes till we have to go home, and you stake that son of a bitch. Conflict resolve.
I love it.
Oh my god, it takes a team effort to do that, and I laugh about it because That is what we did in the Ravenloft game.
Nice. Was it successful?
Yes, it very was good. Very successful.
I love it.
So that's
probably the only way to kill Strahd.
Yeah.
That's one of those where high-level adventurers go to die modules. It's, you know, like Tomb of Horrors.
Mm-hmm.
So another thing that you might be able to do is you can tie some of the stats from the game into some of the RP that's going on around the table. Mm-hmm. For instance, my character might have a fantastic diplomacy skill sitting on the character sheet.
Right.
But rather than just stop the DM and say, hey, before you roll initiative, I want to roll a diplomacy check. Mm-hmm. You can take the initiative, like Dan was saying, stall him, draw out a conversation. And then once he's hooked into that conversation, you go, okay, can I do a diplomacy check?
Right.
And you can roll that into the existing conversation, which is how I like to handle things like diplomacy checks, is you periodically make one throughout the conversation and then shade the responses accordingly.
Yeah, because the dialogue that you have with the game master is stalling combat. And again, I we're really sounding like this is how you get out of combat because combat sucks. And that's not what we're saying. We're saying these are role-playing things that you can do to have an alternative to combat. Or, like you said, maybe the character just doesn't want to be in the combat, or maybe we'll get our asses kicked.
For a moment, let's put aside the usual posturing about how role-playing is basically just
a power trip.
Yeah, power trip. And that aside, why do so many people, particularly earlier in their role-playing career, tend to min-max their characters to be combat badasses?
Because that's where the rules are.
And that's what you need to succeed.
Yeah.
The fact is that other methods are not being allowed by the game master a lot of times to work.
Or the game.
Well, if you play the guy who's the charismatic office worker in a sci-fi campaign filled with powered armor and assault rifles.
I did that.
And if the game master is on board with that.
You were.
And then it worked.
It
and
did.
I would like to say that I think to some extent your opinion or your belief that the earlier, younger gamers tend to min-max toward combat is probably being shaded by your gamer generation.
Yeah.
I found that when we played second edition, everyone min-maxed for combat.
That was the game.
Once you went to third edition, the moment we switched over, I started seeing characters that were built to negotiate, characters that were built to gamble, characters that were min-maxed, absolutely, but for purposes that were absolutely not combat. There were seductresses. There were hardcore negotiators that without a single combat ability. And I think the reason is that up until that point, the games didn't have the rules to back up the role play. So there was nothing to min-max.
You know,
min-max the combat, and then the role play happens regardless of whether your charisma is 4 or 18. You're never going to make a roll on it. So
to play devil's advocate to that, because I used to think the same thing, but I don't really believe that anymore. I believe that the role playing is in the players and the game master's hands. And that those older systems, this is something that a guy on our forums, Lord Fowl, he bangs this drum constantly and he's converted me. The older systems were what we would, if they came out today, kind of refer to as rules light because they were pamphlets and they just weren't robust systems. And that helps role playing because it doesn't get in the way of role playing.
I disagree with you. I don't disagree with you at all.
But that's not how people played them necessarily. But
sometimes it was.
Sometimes they did, And that's what he says all the time is that
there's also something of an arc there where they started out simple. As they got more fleshed out, instead of getting more diverse, they just got more complex. And then there was sort of this return to the simpler games.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that, but it's splitting hairs.
So what are some of the funniest ways you've seen people, I guess funny or compelling, ways you've seen people divert an impending combat?
Whoa. Okay. Hello. Wait a minute.
Meta?
No.
Nice. Actual?
I was going to say, one of the things I was thinking earlier on is I'm a fan of the distraction tactics, and that can be, you know, of lots of skin, cleavage, this, that, the other. That would be good.
I did not see this occur, but I remember reading it somewhere recently. Maybe even on the Fear of the Boot forums, but it was a story of escaping a combat by, I bet it was VV actually, come to think of it. they had the group bard who was a hot elf chick. They were stuck in a house with a goblin army outside. So they stripped the elf chick naked, poured melted butter over her, sent her out the window, running through the goblin army with the, you know, obvious bonuses to avoid grapple from being slick with melted butter, and rushing off for help through the goblin masses, who, of course, all chased the tasty naked elf. And then they went out the back door.
Wow.
Awesome.
That takes the cake for weird.
I think the best
effective.
The best one I have was the one I already told about. We have to go fight Strahd. There's no freaking way that we're going to win this fight. And you just meta push the time limit, keep getting him to talk about, you know, because every time you ask the game master what time it is, it advances time. A game master never says it's 5 o'clock. And then 10 minutes later, you ask, well, what time is it? We did all this stuff. He will not say it's 5 o'clock because you just did all this stuff. It advances time. But you have to stall. You have to stall the puzzles.
I got two. The first one comes from a homebrew sci-fi game we played several years ago. This was the same game that had Chad's Pit Fighter.
Yes, yes.
The same character. And I don't know if we told the story on the show, but we were in a space station. It was a mining colony, real tight-knit community, you know, real blue-collar, roughneck sort of guys. And some kind of a questioning went wrong, and a guy got beat to death.
Because that's kind of what my character did.
And all the other miners come running up, and it's like, great, we're dead. I mean,
we're not talking like five dudes came up and said, hey, guys, we're talking like crowded space station. The character I'm playing is, well, he's kind of a psychopath. And some dude, like a cop or something, was questioning him and pushed all the wrong buttons. And my character, I mean, it was like walking into the middle of a mall during Christmas, pulling out a gun and shooting a guy in the face.
And this is like killing the pillar of the community in a small town. Everybody suddenly shows up and it's like, I don't care how badass you are, you ain't going to take on these odds. And I'm like, we're screwed. And I was sitting here thinking hard because I'm good at coming up with weird, unexpected stuff. And I'm sitting here thinking hard, like, and I've got nothing. And Chad goes, bastard slept with my wife. And it was like, the game master stops, looks at him, and says, another guy spits on him, and they walk away. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
Mass combat averted. Mm-hmm. Here's another one. This was from a World of Darkness game. You know, I said earlier that something that would avert conflict in real life would probably work on a role-playing game. You want to stop a fight in a hurry? Call the cops.
Yeah.
When you call the police, you'd be surprised how many situations just don't work anymore. Got another topic here. I think we can develop this in the time we've got. I don't know if we will fully or not, but I guess we'll see how far we get. But this is one that I want your guys' take on, because I think everyone's answer is going to be different. But this is a question that you have to answer for yourself, because it's purely esoteric. It's purely a personally driven thing. And so I'm curious what you guys have to say, but I'm also curious what the broader community has to say. So please don't hesitate to get in and post your thoughts either on the blog or on the forums. But the question is this. In the current Sunday game that we have, there was a week where I was not present. And the game master, of course, is always left trying to figure out what to do with characters that aren't present. Do you give them an excuse to leave? Do you make them cardboard cutouts that are there for skill checks and that's it? Do you have somebody else role play them? And that's another subject for another time. But Chad made the call to repurpose my character, to take my character, and the character ended up, gaming story I'll try to make short, got possessed by a spirit and turned on the party. And there was this big epic battle, the party trying to...
Because your character is a very badass.
Yeah, he's a powerful character. Yeah. And they ended up fighting him down.
No, they didn't actually beat you.
Nope.
They could not beat you. You were too powerful. You were literally too powerful.
Okay, I wasn't
finally,
there.
Well, we finally held him at the end.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
They finally got a spell to stick.
Mm-hmm.
And so the game ends with my character chained up in the dungeon of Pat's character's castle.
And unfortunately, he dropped the soap. We didn't tell you that.
So, but as the character now passes back to me, there's a conundrum that I am faced with in-game that is having an out-of-game ramification. The in-game conundrum is there's a variety of reasons why at this point the character ought to pass away from the party.
Mm.
Because the fact that he got defeated might shame him into leaving. the fact that he turned on the party but is sworn to protect Pat's character might make him think, I have failed at my purpose, therefore I'm unfit for this. I need to give these duties to someone else until I become stronger. Also within the structure of the society, because this is a collaborative game, and mm-hmm. one of the things that I was developing was this Nolar society. The way I have their society written, and this has come up many times in the game, is there's an internal consistency where this sort of thing, if it does not result in his departure and shame, his self-exile, then being chained up in Pat's dungeon, this would have to result in blood. That basically...
I'm fine with that.
Human King took the Nolish King prisoner, and so the two groups now have to fight.
I would be perfectly willing for you to sacrifice Pat's character at the blade of your axe. I mean...
But, so here's the question. Coming back into the game now, as I retake this character, you know, as I retake control, something was done to this character that obviously did not involve me.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something I think that even happened if you are present. A game master could simply declare such and such and such happens to you, or maybe that's how the dice roll out. And something happens to your character that you never intended, never wanted, and maybe even creates a problem to where the internal consistency of the character is beginning to break down. Now, there are two extreme answers to this, and I don't think either extreme is right. And what I'm trying to feel out is the proper solution in the middle. Extreme number one is to be a whiny little bitch and be so caught up on...
You know, there's a grand tradition of being a whiny little bitch.
There is.
In role-playing in general.
And I've known a lot of people who have been so upset that their character would never do that. My character wouldn't bend even the slightest bit. And the character is gone forever, despite the fact that it was a relatively mild situation compared to the response it got. That's extreme number one, is to be a whiny little bitch about it. Extreme number two is to sacrifice all internal consistency on the altar of expediency. Well, you know, it's kind of best for the group or whatever if we just sweep this under the rug, we rewind the story, we hand wave some things. And it hits a point to where the game almost becomes incoherent. It's almost like actions don't matter. Plot events don't matter. Mm-hmm. The world has no persistent truth.
When you have a rewind button on your game, if you use it once, that's fine. You know, sometimes there's confusion happens. But if you keep hitting a rewind button, then it's the game becomes meaningless.
Exactly. And I've had this situation before where something happens to my character. I'm like, man, I'm really not comfortable with that. And the game master's like, well, do you want me to just say it didn't happen? It's like, well, no, because that somehow cheapens it.
Yeah.
It's like we're just...
In this situation, to rewind it would cheapen the game as a whole, as you're saying, but it would also cheapen the experiences of the other players, minus yourself.
Right.
Because they had epic battle with your character.
Right.
And one of them was actually nearly killed by your character. Right. It was really cool.
And the point of debate that I want to mention and immediately dismiss as being out of the scope of discussion we're having here was whether your handling of my character was right or wrong. Mm-hmm. Because whether your choice to use him as an NPC was right or wrong, whether the way you played him was right or wrong, great discussion, irrelevant to this point.
Right.
The question...
Different episode.
Right. The issue I'm struggling with is right, wrong, indifferent. Sunday is coming up in less than a week. I will probably be in town for this game. I have to decide, does my character do something that will end his involvement in this campaign? At which point I switch to playing one of my other PCs, as we mentioned a couple episodes back, I have two or three, or picking up a new character completely. Or do I find some way to shoehorn in an internal inconsistency of my character wouldn't really do this, but it's for the sake of keeping him in the campaign. What would you guys do?
Well, and here's what I'm curious about, too, is that the three of us, Pat, Dan, and myself, we all played this. We're all deeply involved in this situation. Johan is not in our game, unfortunately, and you're an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
What is your outsider's perspective on just the story that we told?
I find it entirely unshocking. I've dealt with things of that nature in more campaigns than not that I've been involved in, and that's just... The nature of the groups that I've had most recently is such that players were largely transient. So there were people coming in and going, and that sort of thing comes up all the time, and you basically just suck it up. You roll with it. In answer to your question, Dan, what would I do in that situation? Depends on how much I like the character, is my honest answer. If I like the character enough that I'm willing to just smudge the personality a little bit to get him out of it, I'll do it.
I think
that I won't feel bad about
it. It's that attachment that actually makes it harder. I like this character a lot. In fact, depending on how his campaign turns out, there's a very good possibility he will enter my Hall of Fame as one of the most favorite characters I've ever played. But I think that in a way makes it harder, because if I didn't care, I'd be more willing to hand wave it.
The way I look at it is time fuzzes all memories. A year from now, you can remember the great character and forget the little smudge on his personality that you had to do to make him stay in the campaign. It might piss you off for a session, but that's it. After that session, you just forget that happened. Yeah. Sure, you know it happened, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't affect the character as he stands. And when you novelize your character, you just leave that bit out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a big deal.
And one thing that I had suggested to you when we were talking about this originally also was the fact that now you're looking at this as a great failure on your character's part. Try looking at it as this was a great test, and it was something that you ran up against, and maybe your ego ran up against it. You know, you thought there is nothing that can topple me and I must prove that I cannot be toppled in any way. But you know what? You just found out I'm not perfect like I thought I was. This is something I need to work on to become character that I'm striving to be. It's the trials. I mean, every great story that you hear about, it's talking about the trials that the hero must undergo to become the hero or whatever. That's what this was. That goes beyond the fact that, you know, Chad took your character and since you weren't there and did this against the party.
At least he didn't wake up with a tattoo. Well,
that kind of thing. But, you know, that's the way I would look at it. Because, like what you were saying,
we haven't started yet.
Like you were saying that, you know, you really like this character. I'm going to throw it right back at you. I certainly myself, but I think everyone else around the table, except maybe Chad, really likes your character as well.
I like your other character, Rick.
Chad likes your other character
better.
But you
can't play Rick without this guy.
I love your character, and I do not want to see that character leave this party.
Or not Rid, I'm sorry.
Rod.
Yeah. Let me back up, though, to your first point, though, Pat, of coming up against the test. I think that's part of the problem I have. And this is where maybe actually some good things about this campaign are creating a sort of ghost in the machine. The sum of them together is creating a new problem for me, which is the collaborative aspect where I develop parts of the game. But as I just said a few minutes ago, one of the things I developed was the Nolish society. And one of the linchpins of their society is that there is no room for failure. That when you fail is when you are unseated, you are killed, you are exiled. And he is trying to transform that society to be less bloodthirsty, not to be passive, but just to be less violent. But nonetheless, he's having to try and lead a group of people that are used to that lifestyle to say that this is the way it ought to be done, which he can only do from a position of power. And so now here he is, having been shamed in front of his people. Having the gnolls, as I wrote, also don't keep a lot of secrets.
Yeah.
They're cunning creatures, but not deceptive creatures per se. You know, having been taken as a prisoner, having been possessed, having failed to protect someone he was supposed to protect. I don't think this character or that society would have room for that. Once again, with an internal consistency. If this was a human character under a much more civil society, then yeah, you know, he could have that moment where he says, okay, my ego's bruised, but I've got to get back in the ring and fight and prove I can beat the guy I lost to in the prequel. But it'd be really hard.
I understand what you're saying, but I think that your absolutes there are just too strict. I get what you're going for, but for me, it's I liken it under the fact that no one is perfect. Everyone and everything will fail at something at some point in their life. They are never just not going to ever make a mistake.
My only problem with Gnarl and the gnolls and the situation you have, the character is wonderful. Rot is even better, but that's just personal bias. And the society you've made in the game is great. And the brutal, unforgiving nature of it is very, very interesting. I really like it. The issue as a game master that I run into when I look at your character is that if I present a situation where we'll say the big bad comes out and you're there and you have to protect Pat and you go to fight the big bad, and the big bad looks past you, and here comes Pat. He's humming a humming a humming, and the guy like casts a spell at Pat, you know, kind of dodges you, casts a spell, and it kills Pat. There's no sudden death in this game, but let's say there was.
Okay.
And Pat's character dies. You didn't protect him, even though you were doing everything you possibly could. There was, and this is a mechanical dice map model situation. Right. There was nothing you could have done to foresee that or do it or to stop that. And it happens. Well, Pat gets resurrected and he's up, but you failed. Your character failed. And now you can't play the character anymore. I mean, I know that grossly oversimplifies the situation, but, you know,
I suppose maybe there is a difference of slight nuance there. And at least there would be kind of a burn to glory.
Sure.
There'd be moments of revenge and things like that, which could go on for some time because of the fact it'd be something he can defeat. But in the case of this thing, he was possessed. He's not going to.
Oh, you think someone didn't sin this to do this?
Well, but my point being, though, it's not like he's going to go out, kick somebody's ass, and no longer be possessable.
Oh, there's plenty of ass to get kicked.
But my point being, though, it's not. It would not. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying, though? It wouldn't rectify the position
there are
he's in.
Things,
it wouldn't atone for.
Well, let's say. Well, hold on. Let's say that we're doing straight up D&D, and I'm rules guy, right?
All right.
You're really going to have to concentrate on that one. I'm rules guy. And we're playing straight up D&D, and you're there, and I fish out Monster Manual 3. There's a creature in there that does possessions, and I just look at you, and I say, okay, she's going after the biggest guy. Dan, make a will check.
Right.
Your will check sucks. Boom, one, fail, possessed. Get them. And it's the same thing, only it's more mechanical.
Right.
And you're there. And every round, you're making this will check, and it's just the dice are... You have Wayne's dice, and it's like, blow it.
And the thing, that is a great example, because that can happen. It's happened to me in countless campaigns, different stories. I think the issue, though, here is in what our original topic is, it really concentrates on the fact that we have the perfect storm going here.
Right.
And what I mean by that is that it's with Dan's character, the way you fleshed it out, the backstory you put in this,
it's
and
not
all
a mistake.
This that you've done. No, that's not what I mean.
It's not
what I mean at all. It's just that you have put all this definition into this character about not failing and doing this, that, and the other. And then this relatively common kind of a thing comes along. I mean, because like you said, this could have happened if you were there at the table and he just did it, boom. Then all of a sudden, you have to be role-playing against the party as opposed to you weren't there and it happened. The same thing really would have happened. I think, do you think that you'd feel the same way if you were there, that happened, and he told you, role play yourself against the party?
Ultimately, though, that's not the point, because we're not talking about the right or wrong of the action.
Well, we're talking about the taintedness.
I think the real question is, no matter how the situation played out, how legitimate or unlegitimate the situation is, what can you do to keep playing your character that everybody at the table loves?
My thought on it, just from listening to this and listening to your description of the character, what about simply reframing the time definition of failure? The whole point that he has is that he failed by getting possessed.
Mm-hmm.
What if he kills the thing that possessed him or the thing that sent the possession? Then he beat it. He didn't fail. He won in the long run.
Because what I want to do is that the next gaming session we did, Dan is in chains in the dungeon. And I was thinking about doing something with Rot because I like him too much. But Dan explained Rot wouldn't do this. So that's why we don't even need Rot for this. Rot's his like pocket healer, pocket cleric, and who makes fun of Gnarl all the time. And it's just hilarious. But Dan's chained up in the dungeon and you're in the thralls of this thing. And then we zoom into your psyche and you are having this battle of wills with this creature. And it is through force of not your will check. It is through the force of your character, the force of your presence. You expel this thing from you and you overcome it and win it. And I just had this imagining of you overcome it and you're just filled with power and you rip the chains out of the wall, kick the door of the cell open, and you walk back up and to him and role play that out.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I would approach it in your shoes, I think, is not necessarily that particular scenario, but I would look at the possession, not as a failure, but as the initial challenge. Somebody just threw down the gauntlet by doing this. Now I'm going to pick it up and I'm going to win.
Yeah. And because to me, it's not the thing that possessed you that overcame you. It's the thing that sent that to possess you that you need to overcome. Because that thing that got you, I mean, who cares? It doesn't even have a personality. It's like this generic monster, right? It's the mind behind it. It's the grand architect that is doing this, that is trying to kill him, kidnap your friend, possess you, that will be overcome.
Let me respond to you guys in reverse order. I'm going to make a comment to Chad and then make
good, because I won't remember what I said.
Yeah. But the comment I'll make to Chad, people say they want more developed gaming stories. Let's see if they actually mean what they say.
They don't.
Yeah, that's what we're probably going to find out here. Is one of the things that you developed in your setting, and this is a deviation.
I have developed very little in our setting.
Well, but there's one thing that, because you specifically said this to me, this was even a rules call.
Okay.
There's one thing that is true in the D&D rules that you have said is simply not true in your setting.
Right.
Which is, in the D&D rules, spiritual things are affected by typical magic.
Right.
That if a spirit, an extra planar being, whatever shows up, magic missile will hurt it.
Mm-hmm.
You have said that you want a more solid delineation between the divine and the arcane, so to speak.
Yeah.
Not exactly they're divine. But the point is that
there's a spirit world. Yeah, there's a difference between spirits and ghosts.
And a magic weapon or a magic missile or a lightning bolt is not going to affect them. That's not to say that no magic could affect them, but they're not as vulnerable as they should be under the standard D&D rules. And so I think part of the difficulty is the fact that what this would open my character's eyes to is that on the battlefield, fighting, whether it's human knights or goblin hordes or giant spiders, my axe can solve a problem. But now, as Pat's character starts opening more and more of this spirit realm and exposing the party to that more and more, he's going to say,
I'm not doing that. That's Wayne.
Character perceptions, but point being, he's going to say, look, here is something against which I can't fight. You know, there is no victory to be had. Because at this point, he would have no reason to believe there's a material mind behind it. It's just a spirit came along. Well, this world's filled with spirits.
Let's get into the gaming story, though. The gaming story is that these guys were sitting around a table discussing their dark plans, because our fair adventurers are not good people. They are bad people. And they were discussing their plans and whatnot when there was a sort of raid, a sort of medieval version of a commando raid. They're calling them the Green Cloaks because they all were wearing identical green cloaks. And we made the joke that they didn't know each other. They just found a good deal at the same time. And there was a raid, and the whole setup was that these guys were from a different kingdom opposed to Pat's kingdom, and that they were here to kidnap Pat. But the twist of it all is that they did not care about Pat. They were actually trying to kidnap Wayne's character, the Bard, because the Bard was from that kingdom. They don't know why that was. They figured it out right at the end after you killed one of the party members. And they're all together, and it's a commando run. And two things were established in this. They figured out that these guys were sent to do this, and that they also learned that this creature that they brought with them, I don't do detect magic where it glows, right? And that's magic because it's glowing. It's powerful magic because it's glowing bright. That's a D&D thing that I threw out. I have the spirit realm. Spirits are not ghosts.
It's very much Shadowrun astral plane.
Sure. Totally.
Yeah.
And
because Chad loves Shadowrun.
Actually,
the entire magic system of this game is straight out of Shadowrun. I don't know why we're not using the Shadowrun rules, to be completely honest.
Hey, man, I didn't want to do D&D. But actually, I'm taking this all from an anime. There's a specific anime that's Mochichi. I'll get back to you for the show notes on what the anime
Shadow
is.
Shadow Run.
And so anyway, there's a spiritual plane, and it's filled with spirits that are not ghosts. It's like astral creatures that are sort of maintainer spirits, and they kind of maintain the world, but nobody really knows how they work. And there's a delineation, and the spiritual realm can kind of affect the physical realm. The physical realm can kind of is a reflection of that. Anyway, it's this long esoteric thing. And the detect magic is not you look at something and it glows. It's you look into the spirit realm. And so you have not religious people, but you have the clerics and shamans, and they are completely mundane. They don't cast any spells. They communicate with spirits, and the spirits do things for them that manifest the physical world as spells. Hooray. Pat's character is a mage. He's a magic user, and it is a study, an arcane study, that takes the spiritual realm and it twists it and it breaks it. And it does nasty, bad things to it. And that's how he does his things. That manifests in the real world as spells, as fireball, lightning bolts, all that sort of thing. So this creature comes walking in, and the bad guys are making their speeches, and the good, quote-unquote, good guys are making their speeches right back at him, and everybody's about to draw down, and everybody's about to throw down initiative. And this creature, this person, she's a woman wearing a green cloak, and when she doesn't talk to you and she looks at you, she looks right through you. And Wayne saw her coming, and Wayne is a bard, and he has magical abilities, and so he casts the detect magic, which means he steps into the spirit realm, and he looks into the spirit realm. And he sees her, and he sees this sort of miasma around her, and that these spirits, these sort of maintainer household spirits that are everywhere and doing their thing, and they're kind of the background of everything, are going around her and will not touch her and will not go near her, and they kind of swim around her as she walks forward. And then they had the moment where it's like, okay, it breaks and they're going to fight. And Dan's character, Gnarl, I have him, you know, enough of this prattle type thing. I don't remember exactly what he's saying. You leap across the table. You put your hand on the table and you leap across and your battle axe is out and you're going to cleave this guy in half. There's going to be two guys there, a pair of legs and an upper torso. And you're going to do it. And she steps forward and this thing, and Wayne sees this thing in the spirit realm come out of her and into you, and she collapses and you collapse. And it isn't a spirit and it isn't a ghost. It's a creature, and it's a creature that exists in both physical and real worlds. And so if you want to kill it, you have to get it out of you, and you kill it. But it's a creature that is sent, and it was sent by the bad guy.
Johan, to your point, I think you framed it very well. In problem solving, you have to do two things. One, you have to identify the problem. And two, you have to identify the parameters that surround the problem. What you did in looking at it, you said, look, here's specifically what is bugging you mm-hmm. about this event, mm-hmm. the failure, the whatever. Here's the parameters surrounding it. Here's the structure of a society you've built you're trying to stay consistent to. And I think your potential solution of redefining defeat, I have to think through this to really decide if it's the one I want to use or not, but I think it's a very workable solution, at least on the surface, because of the fact that it's better than just saying, man up and deal with it, just hand right. wave it, change your character, whatever.
Man up and deal with it is meaningless, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's totally meaningless.
When I said man up and deal with it earlier, this is what I meant. You know, yeah. find a solution that's yeah. workable internally for yourself. And even though it might not be exactly what you would have come up with had you not been thrust into this situation, it's good enough.
Right, but it's sort of a compromise mm-hmm. solution in that it still gives a fair nod to the concerns that I have without being so strict. We've talked about rules lawyers and setting lawyers, that suddenly I become my own character lawyer.
Yeah. That, well, and the ultimate character lawyer that you would use with Gnarl is that I said that I would be faced with is I can never put you in a situation where you would fail. Because if Gnarl fails, you can no longer play Gnarl. Quite frankly, that's unacceptable. It's for any so character.
At least yeah. not for a long-lasting character.
Yeah, for a long-lasting. Yeah, for a con game or a short campaign. But yeah.
Or even a campaign in which you don't intend that character to be a permanent fixture.
Yeah, exactly. Right, you know. Exactly. But everyone wants this character to be a permanent fixture, and right. we want it to be a long campaign.
Right. So I don't know exactly how I'm going to address this, but I guess the broader point I wanted to raise about gaming, and throw this out to the community as a whole.
Never let Chad Game Master
is,
for you.
Is I think that everyone at some point in their gaming life has had a point where you felt like a character got tainted by an action, either whether you were present or not, that something happened in a character's life. Heck, maybe even it was your choice, but a character went in a direction you didn't mm-hmm. want to go. And you,
I've had it happen to me.
Yeah. Everyone I believe has, if you've been gaming for any significant amount of time, I believe you have, and you've had to decide where is that line to where this character is no longer playable versus I just need to man up and find some kind of compromise here. And I'm curious how people draw that line and what kind of solutions they've come up with. And I think that my situation I'm in right now, which I still don't have a perfect answer for, is sort of just an interesting discussion point or case study, I guess, in that problem. But I think this is a problem that's sort of ubiquitous to gamers. And what I would like to do is see how we solve or fail to solve this problem and then come back in an episode or two and maybe as a banter topic, do sort of an epilogue on this to figure out what it is we learned. If anyone threw out some interesting advice, maybe add that in as well and just kind of see where this leads for us. So I think we're pretty much up against time. So we'll wrap this up one up here.
Hold on.
Oh, no.
No.
Got one thing. I have a gaming anecdote since okay. we don't have time yeah. for a gaming story. But the moment you brought up this topic, okay. I knew I had to tell this.
All right, go ahead.
This was teenage gaming. So okay. you have to bear this in mind. Mm-hmm. But we sat down, spent probably 2 weeks between three of us working on characters, right? We developed the characters, developed their personalities, how the group was going to interact, had this great story. They were all gladiators at the beginning of the campaign is how it was starting. Then we suddenly find somebody who says, hey, I want to DM a game. That's awesome. You know, we plan this rotating DM thing, but uh-huh. this guy wants to DM. It's awesome. We tell him what we're doing, how we're starting. He's like, great, let's roll with it. You guys start out, you're in the gladiator pit. Okay, that's a good place to start. There's a dragon in there with you. What? Okay, you have no weapons. This sucks. But there's some crates around you. Awesome, crates. I like crates. We open a crate. Well, there's a sword in it. I pick it up. Great, it's cursed. You're now chaotic evil. And you can't put the sword down.
Wow.
Boom.
I fall on said sword.
Lawful good to chaotic evil within 30 seconds of gameplay.
Wow.
Remember Chad talking about taking out a gun and putting it on the table? I think we found a place where the issue here is not one character extreme or another, but rather somebody needs to get capped.
You hear that, Joe? Wow. You're a bastard. And nice. On that note, we can sign off.
All right, so thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
Joe, we're coming for you.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2011. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.